Welcome to I'm Not Dead Yet with Judy and Travis, a podcast about living an extraordinary life with extraordinary circumstances.
Welcome to the I'm Not Dead Yet podcast. I'm your co-host, Travis Robinson. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease at age 35 in 2014.
And I'm your other co-host, Judy Yaris. My husband Sandy had Parkinson's disease for 18 years, and I was his care partner.
This episode will be checking in.
Hi, Travis.
Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like we went steady for a while there, and now I haven't seen you for a while. So I thought it's a good time for us to kind of check in and just do our thing. We've had a lot of wonderful guests in the last couple months that have been amazing.
Yes.
And I just thought I wanted to see how you're doing. I know you're back in school. Is that right?
Yes, back in school and hopefully coming in on the final lap.
Oh, that's great. I'm excited for you.
Yes, you and me both.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know it's hard, though. It's got to be challenging for you to do so many classes and to do so many courses at one time.
Well, I don't know that college is ever really easy.
No. I mean,
a lot of folks do it and go through it, and they do it when they're young and they don't know any better. And so they go through it, you know, sometimes straight after high school when they're still used to this idea of cramming a bunch of shit into your brain. But, man, my brain is already full of plenty of other shit.
Yep, no question about it. And it's not easy to do that, you know, to cram and to try to hold on to so much stuff, especially if you're losing some executive function and you're tired and you have other things going on.
Yes. I have a whole logistical circus before I even get to class in the morning.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think it takes a whole army of thoughts to get you out the door and in the car.
Yes, and that's just getting to the school. Then I have to get my happy ass out of the car, which is sometimes more of a challenge than I like to admit, and get into the classroom.
Right. Do you have, I mean, I don't know anyone that drives with this, but I wondered, I had one for Sandy. It's like a swivel seat for the car.
I do not.
It's like a lazy Susan that sits on the seat. And so it helps you turn. And it actually was very handy. It's padded, so it's not as uncomfortable as it sounds. But it's a little bit weird. I mean, he used it for a while and it was effective for him. But I can't imagine having that when you're driving, because I would think with any involuntary movements, you'd be swiveling the whole time. And that doesn't sound too safe to me.
No, that seems like it would be a more of a liability than an asset.
Yes, I would think so. Well, in any case, I know it's hard when you're driving. You have to really concentrate and getting to school. I mean, it takes a lot of concentration to do all of this and just to get through your day.
Yes.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I had an interesting thing. I had a PRP treatment, a PRP procedure, and they take your blood out and then they spin it in a centrifuge machine, and then it separates the plasma and the platelets from the other part of the blood. And so you have two vials, one which is clearer, very clear looking, and the other which is a very dense, dark, dark, dark color of reddish black. And then they re-inject the platelets back in. And I had it done on the opposite hip of my surgical hip because it carrying the load when I had been putting so much pressure on it for so long, it was really starting to go south on me and having a problem. So I ended up doing it in that hip, and it's been pretty successful so far. I mean, I'm not doing a lot of stuff right now. I'm still taking it easy, but it was cool to see your blood separated like that.
Yeah, plasma on one wall, platelets on the other. It's like boys and girls at a junior high school dance.
Yeah, absolutely. It was pretty cool. So we'll see how long the technology holds up and if it stays good. I'm hoping it does. So far, so good. I thought that was interesting. I know they use it. A lot of people have had it for knees, and it's supposed to be very successful for hips. So we'll see what happens. So that's my medical side for the month. That's all I have
boy.
To share. Yeah, nothing exciting. But I did want to say I heard some very interesting statistics about loneliness. And
okay.
I'm actually going to talk about this with our support group, our next support group, because I think it's something that's so important. And I guess the Surgeon General has written a book, and I can never get his first name correct, but the last name is Muthy, M-U-T-H-Y. He's young. He's like 47. I didn't realize he was that young. But he has written a wonderful book on really covering, after he went across the country and talked to folks about how they are feeling, you know, about loneliness and whether you're working in an environment with 100 people or you're staying at home by yourself, that it can be very hard on you physiologically, that it can really affect other systems. It's not just a mental thing that you feel depressed, but it can really affect your whole endocrinological system.
Right. That's one of those things that was early studied in the mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that folks were having the impact of their mental state in their physiological state.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that doctors have long observed in patients who have good support networks.
Uh-huh.
They recover much faster and better. Patients who don't recover.
Right. It's a fascinating way to look at ourselves, because I think people always separate and make a clear distinction between what the brain is doing, what the mind is doing, you know, that emotional things may not affect us physiologically, but it definitely does. And I was very moved by it, by the idea that, there's been a lot of talk about young people, you know, especially with social media and everything. How many young people feel that even with social media, they still feel very alone. And the idea of actually having contact, that you don't have to have a lot of contact, but even with one or two other people can really change your biological outlook. And I found that to be fascinating.
Right. And something that I'm observing, you know, in class and talking to my peers is that while older generations of folks use social media as a way to connect with their friends or family that are not, you know, physically close to them.
Mm-hmm.
For younger folks, it seems to have the opposite effect It's an insulation from them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas we who grew up before the advent of Facebook have established all of our social connections without that. We use it as a stopgap or a fill-in for exchange with those people. But mm-hmm. if you grew up always having that, then it seems to be an instead of.
Yes, I know. It's hard to imagine that you only have that. But it's funny, I was at a restaurant a couple weeks back, and there probably were six or seven of these young teenagers that came in, mm-hmm. and they sat down, and they all had their phones, and they weren't saying a word to each other. They were just all on their phones. And it was such an odd thing to see, because I thought back when I was young and used to hang out with friends, we'd sit down and we were so, like, we just jabbered about who knows what, you know, like it was just nonstop talking. And they were so quiet, but it's because they weren't interacting with each other. Maybe they were. I mean, maybe they were sending each other chats or something. I just thought it was so odd to see them not interacting. And I wasn't there long enough. I was getting ready to leave. So I wasn't there long enough to see if when the food came, if they were going to put their phones down and they'd actually talk to each other. Because when they came in, they were talking to each other. But as soon as they sat down, they completely stopped. It got totally quiet. And I thought that was such an odd thing to see.
Yes. And it's like when the food arrives, they're all taking pictures of it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's another thing. Like Instagram, my Instagram is all food. I just want to say, because I follow a lot of chefs and I am always seeing, I get recipes, like I get probably 30 a day and I just go through and that's what I'm looking at. Shoes and clothes. Those are my two favorite things. And occasionally I see a check-in from a friend or someone, but, it's pretty interesting to see how social media has been impacting us. But I am not the best person on any of it. I tend to not use it as much as maybe I should. I guess I could do more with it. I probably should do more. But in any case, it's all beyond us, Travis. And you know, you're the kid here, and even for you, it seems like it's a lot. So.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, how are your PD symptoms holding up with the stress of school? Are you able to manage your stress? What are you doing about that?
So this semester, I knew that my schedule was going to be pretty full. I'm in class 6 days a week. And
wow.
So I doubled down on my pickleball game and trying to do that 90 minutes to 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And
a pickleball?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's,
is that going to be the new ping pong for good? You're going to, I mean, is that, it's interesting. It must have some of the same properties as ping pong.
Yes, they're both racket sports or paddle sports.
Paddle sports.
There's a lot more moving around on a pickleball court,
sure.
But yeah.
That's pretty cool. So that's a lot. That's a lot of exercise for you every day.
No, that's a lot of playing.
A lot of playing. Right, which is good. But playing is I maintain that playing is exercise. So that's
good. And I maintain that exercise is what you need to do when you don't play enough.
When you don't play enough. Okay. There you go. That's a great recipe right there.
Right. So as long as I get 1.5 to 2 hours of playing in the morning, then the rest of my day goes much better.
That's fantastic. I'm so proud of you for doing this. That's great. Because we know it's better for you to exercise every day. And the more you can do, the better it is. And yeah, that's actually a lot, 1.5 to 2 hours. I mean, when you think about it, the recommendations are at least 30 minutes a day. And you're doing triple that. So pretty good.
Well, I've always been an overachiever.
I was just going to say, you're definitely an overachiever. But I think that's wonderful, Travis. I'm glad to hear that because you're obviously feeling the benefits of doing that, which is so important.
Yes, I am generally.
Good.
And regarding stress, that is also helped my general outlook.
Yes, it would. Because you're pushing those endorphins, baby. That's what that's about, you know.
Yeah. And philosophically, there's something about, like, if you have a problem that you can't resolve, it's better to put that on the back burner of your brain and go play for an hour or two, and then you can come back to that thought or problem and it will be resolved.
That makes perfect sense. I think we all need that. I've upped my meditation a bit too now. I'm trying to add an extra 5 minutes a day. So I'm up to 15, sometimes even 20, not often on the 20, but I'm pretty good at getting my 15 in now. And that seems to balance me. That's really helped me a lot.
Yeah.
In being present and really focusing on myself a little bit. I think we need this. We need this time. I'm looking forward to being able to exercise again. Right now, I can't really do more than a little bit of walking, but I'm anxious to get on my bike. I have to tell you, I've got this new thing I do when I see cyclists on the road. If I'm not driving, I will close my eyes for a minute and I will think back to what it feels like to be on my bike and how good that feels to do my pedaling and to feel the wind and the air flowing through. And so I'm sort of like vicariously riding with that person for a moment, you know. It's like a 10-second kind of thing that I just get a quick hit of that visualization and what that feels like. And I have to be honest that it makes me calmer for that moment.
Yes, it's mindfulness.
A little bit of mindfulness. And the fact that we remember, we can go back. You know, if you're in a situation where maybe you can't do something that you really loved to do before, you can visualize that and think about what it felt like and how good it felt and spin it to the positive, that you can actually get your body to start to feel that again. It's a fascinating process, but it works and it does the job.
Yes, I heard many years ago stories of POWs in wartime, people that were locked up in solitary or near solitary conditions for, you know, decades on end, that did things like master their golf game because they were focused on visualizing and going through the steps of a golf swing.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Well, I mean, you didn't have a lot of other options.
No, you don't have much to do when you're in that situation. But I mean, when you think about it, being in a high stress situation of a lockup like that, where you can't really live your life on any level, you're just sustaining, you're just staying alive. You're breathing, you're eating, you're excreting bodily functions, you know, excreting these fluids and solids. But you are not having the experience. I think that idea of visualizing the experience and how that can impact you and give you a sense of well-being. And there's something to be said for all of this. Some people might poo-poo it, but I think it's really, it's definitely there and something that you can try, you know.
Right. And what is interesting to me is that the gentleman, at least that I read about, was able to improve his game, not just by, you know, practicing what he already knew, but by self-correcting his swing to the point where when he finally was released, his golf game was much better than when he went in.
So this is a great way to look at Parkinson's, right? If you can concentrate on your walking, or if you have something specific that you have really been struggling with, and you can visualize it and see yourself doing it, there may be an uptick with that, right? Does it make sense? I mean, it makes sense to me, but I wonder how much of it.
Absolutely makes sense, because so much of what we do is what we think we have to do.
Right.
Not, I mean, it may not be consciously thought by most folks who just hop out of the chair and walk. But if you're able to actually focus on how you're going to take those steps, this is done in pretty much every sport.
Right.
Every athlete studies videos of themselves, videos of other players, and they look at no wasted movement.
Right.
You know?
So you're conserving energy.
Yeah.
And you're more effective in what you're doing. So I think this is really interesting. I'm going to kind of throw this out to our listeners this week, that maybe you give it a try and let us know. Send us some feedback if you find this to be an effective tool for you, a visualization, and see if you can apply it somehow to your everyday life.
Yes. There's a whole study or a whole science on this. It's called neuroeconomics.
Okay. Maybe we need to find a neuroeconomic instructor to come in and talk with us about this. That could be something to someone we could look for. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Neuroeconomics. All right. Well, this sounds good, Travis. I like this.
Okay.
We're leaving on a high note today, a challenge for our listeners. So you can't go wrong with that.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, Travis, take it easy.
All right, Judy, I will talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
That's a wrap. Bing.